You're with Jen Fleming on ABC Local Radio.
And look, I'm just looking for my script here, Syl Gerrion, who's sitting in front of me. Really, we're talking about Twitter. You might have seen this week that one very prominent sign-up happened, 31st of December. Rupert Murdoch has joined the popular social media network, a website and so on. My first reaction was, well, doesn't he have enough outlets to express his views? But there's been quite a bit of discussion about it. First of all, was it the real Rupert Murdoch? It seems to be that it was established that, yes, it was, even though it was a fake Wendy Deng who responded to the real Rupert Murdoch. So the social media site Twitter, whether you use it or not, seems to be a growing force to be reckoned with. Apparently it has about 150 million viewers, users, I suppose the word is. So Syl Gerrion, who's a social media analyst and media analyst generally, is with us in the studio. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, my pleasure, Jen.
Yeah, so Rupert Murdoch, what was your reaction when you heard that he'd signed up?
What took you so long? He's the greatest media magnate in the world. He should be in touch with all of the people who are creating new kinds of media in the world, because they're all using Twitter to stay in touch with each other and with their peers and with their audience. And Rupert wasn't there. He should have been there 2 years ago. That was my first thought. Mm. My second thought was, I looked at his first few tweets, and they're still kind of preserved there for posterity, and they're kind of a bit embarrassing. I would have thought that someone with the resources of News Corporation at his fingertips, like he would have had someone from marketing or PR or a sub-editor from one of the newspapers helping him, like, not make quite as much of an idiot of himself.
He should have had a little advice, you think, beforehand. Yeah, well, I think the first one, he was commenting on Britain having too many public holidays for a broke country.
Yeah.
And he tweeted that while he was on holidays himself in St. Bart.
Well, what happened here? Apparently there was a bit of a New Year's Eve bash amongst some of the, like, the medium billionaires.
Do they all gather on New Year's Eve?
I don't know. They didn't invite
me. You weren't there?
Yeah. Didn't invite me. But Ev Williams, who's the founder of Twitter, was there. He's kind of doing some other things now.
Oh, he and Jack Dorsey set it up,
And they set up, apparently, so the story goes, they set up Rupert's Twitter account for him on his iPad. So then the next day he's getting a bit bored on the yacht, as you do. And so he starts poking at it. And, you know, the first tweet was, I don't know, I called it a brain fart the other day. I mean, it is the kind of thing that anyone on Twitter could get away with if they weren't Rupert Murdoch.
Right.
And everybody's now, you know, I think on the first day he'd said there was like less than 20 tweets, and it was a bit like each one was on a stone tablet and we were analysing it for its implications.
Yeah.
No, it's just,
which is sort of kind of against the whole purpose of Twitter, isn't it? Twitter's supposed to be, you have an idea, you've only got 140 characters.
That's
not
right.
Long. It's like two lines.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of post it. You hope people respond. Most of the time, people ignore it. Although I find it quite useful if there's something happening in real time and you want to follow it, then Twitter becomes quite useful. Otherwise, I'll pop on, you know, every now and then, but it's not compulsory for me.
Well, yeah, I use it. I mean, I follow a fairly large number of people, and I'm one of the most prolific users of Twitter in Australia. I've tweeted more than 60,000 tweets.
Goodness gracious.
Over the last,
I need to follow you still.
3.5 years, something right. Like that. It's a bit grim because there's a vast amount of detail of my daily activities, and not the what I had for breakfast, but I start off each day with, well, an observation of what mood I'm in, which is always a good sign for someone else to know, all right, we won't phone him just yet.
What, so your friends sort of check your mood on Twitter first before?
Well, yeah, well, they know that. But at the beginning of the day, I sketch out in one tweet, the plan for the day has to fit in 140 characters. And that's really me deciding what are the essential things to get done today.
Mm. But why do you need to broadcast that?
Because it's useful to the people who it's useful for. It affects people, like if
your
they're
audience.
A client,
so the
my
people
audience.
Who follow you,
yep.
who choose
if,
to follow you,
yep. if
they like it.
Yep. If they know that I'm going to be covering a conference, because I work freelance as a journalist and producer and commentator on all sorts of things in the tech industry. If I'm covering a conference, well, people need to know about that. And if they're not interested, they can just turn me off for the day. If I tell people where I'm heading for lunch or where I'm having a meeting,
they can meet up with you.
Exactly
right,
that.
Okay.
And I've had that happen when
yeah.
I said, okay, we're having a meeting at, you know, secret meeting at the Rag and Famish in North Sydney. And then in the course of the afternoon, three separate people who'd been wanting to catch up to conduct some business just popped in,
okay.
had an ale,
yeah.
did
so
business.
So it suggests to me that your personality then is clear to those who follow you. And we know
yes.
Rupert Murdoch's personality because of traditional media. What about everyone else who doesn't really have a well-known personality, maybe to their viewers? What's the purpose of Twitter, then, as you say?
I mean, there's no one single purpose. I started off just tweeting for myself, just to be thinking aloud, in mm-hmm. a sense. This is what I'm doing. This is an article I'm reading that I'm finding interesting. This is something that I've just heard on the radio or seen on television, so I'm going to see how many F words I can fit into the one tweet. So, you know, there's a parental advisory that
right.
goes with following
explicit,
my Twitter stream.
Yes.
Oh,
okay,
yes,
fair
yes,
enough.
Yes, yes.
You have to be over 18 for your feed.
Yes,
right.
But it might be, look, a problem I'm working on, and it's interesting now that up until, say, three years ago, if I had a technical problem I was working on, I would use Google, probably as the most popular search engine,
mm-hmm.
look for the answers, read documentation. I'd stuff around for an hour or two trying
yeah.
to find the answer. Now, I just dump it into Twitter.
Really?
Help. How can I do X with Y? And usually within 5 minutes, I've got the answer.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm using the previous model. So how many followers do you have?
I'll have to look. It's yeah. 6,000 and
right,
something.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got 90. So
okay.
maybe my audience wouldn't be able to help me with my problems. But because you're active, you're on it quite a lot.
Yes.
Then
yes.
you can use it as a resource.
So there's a constant stream of everything I'm doing, which might be, if I'm at a conference, I might be talking about the conference. As I made the way here today, I reported that traffic was a bit lighter than expected, so I'll be taking a cleansing ale at the pub next door before we start.
Oh.
What's Sunday, isn't it?
It's Sunday.
And,
we're relaxed here.
Yeah. And
did anyone pop in to visit you?
No.
Oh, that's a pity.
No, it's very sad.
Yeah.
One thing I had to do too, I do a regular podcast elsewhere, ZDNet Australia, and kicking off the new one for the year, I thought, well, I've got a choice of two topics. Which shall I do? And one was going to be a kind of edited highlights of stuff from a hacker conference in Germany, some fascinating stuff. And I thought, well, that, and, you know, it's already Sunday and it has to be filed by 9 o'clock Monday morning. So I thought, well, that I can do into the evening. And then someone said, no, we need to know more about anonymous hacking into Stratfor, the American intelligence company.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's still unfolding. Can we do something like that? And I thought, oh, yeah, but that means chasing people on a Sunday and getting to commit to a record time. As I was having that conversation at 8 o'clock this morning, it was late afternoon in Detroit, Michigan, where one of the leading commentators on cyber warfare just tweeted back, well, I'll be available for you. I've been looking at this.
That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
So the world is just a bit smaller.
It is. It's kind of like you can dump every conversation you're having into this enormous sewer, really. I mean, it's an open storm drain, and your conversation can be dumped into it, but you can also monitor it and search for it. So a lot of companies are actually starting to use this for customer service.
Well, yes, and this is what I wanted to get to. I'm speaking with Stuart Gerrion, who's a media commentator.
It's all new now.
All new.
Yeah.
You're with Jen Fleming on ABC Radio across Australia, filling in for James O'Loughlin. And we're talking about, well, we started with Rupert Murdoch joining Twitter and then more about the use of the device itself. A lot of people are trying to monetize, as they say in the United States, or use it as a vehicle to promote their product. Or
yes.
They say, look, I'm here to connect with you. So you're building a relationship, number one. But there's also, there's a lot of, I'm trying to sell to you. I want you to follow me, or I'm trying to build credibility for my brand. In the end, is it becoming more of a cynical commercial endeavor?
Well, no, because people who treat Twitter in that way are generally held in disdain by others. And I think it's because if we look at the offline world, the physical world, there are some contexts in which a commercial conversation is just fine. In a shop, in a shopping mall, in the high street, etc. There are other conversations we have where it's not appropriate. At the pub, at a family picnic, in a church or a synagogue or a temple. All of those kind of occasions, you don't want someone butting in. But because they're separated physically in space, we know not to go up to someone having a family picnic and try and sell an insurance or real estate.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who do it.
The barbecue stoppers, they're called.
Yeah. We know what we think of those people. Twitter is kind of this massive conversation. Now, some people are doing very business-like things with it, but other people are, they might just be following their family and close friends. Mm. They might only be talking to them. They might have lockdown Twitter accounts that aren't publicly accessible.
I thought Facebook was for that, for more kind of...
One of the most cynical lines I ever heard was that Twitter's for the people important in your life now, and Facebook is for the people who used to be important in your life.
Nasty.
School reunions and things. That's a bit nasty. But Facebook is trying to copy Twitter's real-time relevance, and that's really the thing. The fact that it's immediate, and we see that coming back to when there is a an event unfolding. Now, when was it? A few months back, where that Qantas jet leaving Singapore, it's had an engine blow up.
Yes.
Very good Four Corners episode showing just how well those pilots managed to bring plane back and saved everyone's life. It could have been very messy. That spread on Twitter very, very quickly. Same with the Japanese earthquake and whatever. But the Qantas engine, what they call it, an uncontained engine failure,
I
believe.
Explosion would be what other people would say.
That was spreading on Twitter from eyewitnesses who were on the ground in Indonesia. And for some reason, Twitter is huge in Indonesia.
Oh, right.
Like,
I didn't know that.
Even more so per population than almost anywhere else. There's something about the national character in Indonesia, Twitter and Facebook for that matter as well, but Twitter in particular. So people started saying, we've heard an explosion in the sky. Something has fallen down into the yard of this school. We pick up this big piece of metal and it's got like a kangaroo on it, and they hold it up and
take a photo.
That was spreading through Twitter. People who were buying and selling Qantas shares picked up the word Qantas, because if you imagine Twitter's this sewer, well, it's more like a fire hose, the stream. In fact, they call it that. If you want the whole feed of all the tweets, they call it the fire hose. It's this massive quantity of data. But you can start searching it and filtering it. So the share traders saw, oh, Qantas, oh, explosion, and the share price started dropping.
Incredible.
And the first thing that the Qantas board of directors and their senior management knew about this potential disaster was they saw their share price dropping. And what, like, why? Why is our share price dropping? Yeah, and then they said, well, you've had a plane blow up. Yeah, an incident. And
so which raises a question, though. How do you verify the authenticity of information on Twitter? You have to trust that the person who is describing this is telling the truth. It's like, you know, in radio, we have protections. You can't just call up and say whatever you want as a talkback caller and be broadcast. If somebody makes a claim, you have to confirm that information.
That's right. And
that's the process, and that's part of the protection.
And this is one of the real problems that the gatekeepers of the old media have. They say, but anyone could say anything. And you go, yes, that's right. Anyone could say anything. Just like at the pub, after a few beers, they can say anything. And to think of Twitter as the source is perhaps not right. It's to think of the people and the context as a source. So if this tweet is coming from an official ABC account or an official Qantas account, then, you know, that's trustworthy. If it's just someone saying something, I mean, the question has to come back, well, who said what?
But if a share price is falling because of information from somebody watching somewhere in Indonesia...
Correct.
That's a bit concerning, don't you think?
It is, and indeed, in that particular incident, because the tweets started conflating an explosion in the sky with a bit of metal on the ground.
Mm.
2 minutes later, it was an aircraft has exploded and crashed.
Okay, so it's wrong.
Which it hadn't. It's wrong. And I forget which of the US news services decided to go with that, because the Indonesian news services were picking it up. They were quoting that's what people were saying on the ground.
Mm.
Not really a Twitter thing. It was just telephone.
Isn't this the danger with Twitter, that it has everything so sped up? It's like, you know, there's always been this wish to be first with the news.
Yes.
And so now, because you're so desperate to be first and things are so quick now, that you are willing to put somebody's perhaps reputation or company reputation on the line.
Oh, that happened, and I wasn't sure whether it was Fox or NBC, but as soon as one of them did, the other had to go with it had crashed as well. And it took, I think, 6 minutes for Qantas management to phone their operations team, and their operation team's phone back. No, the aircraft is definitely still in the sky. We're getting all of the data from it. We're talking to the pilots now. We have a serious problem, but we're working it.
Mm-hmm.
But that took, you know, 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah, which is an eternity on Twitter time.
And the day traders love that, because the Qantas share price goes down, they buy a bunch of shares.
Right.
10 minutes later, the share price goes up again.
Interesting. You manipulate things.
I think your point about the news is yes, this idea of being first. Well, you're only first for about a minute now, maybe 30 seconds. And perhaps it's more important to be right. Perhaps it's more important to think about, well, how does your news product fit into the lifestyle of your audience? Now, the classic one of that is the evening television news. You know, hard day at work, you've got dinner underway, and then the family is together watching the 7 o'clock news, and that is the summary of the day.
Yes.
Everything happens today. There was kind of... another story I was told about the commercial news on at 6 p.m., that was because Dad's just got home from work. He's knackered after a hard day. He slumps in front of the 6 o'clock news, and it's, kids, just shut up. Dad's watching the news.
I think that's a long time ago. Does any dad get home at 6 o'clock? And
no.
It's pretty mum getting home. You know, no. They're all 24-7 now with devices and so on.
Exactly.
So things have changed.
Things have changed. You do see some people like National Public Radio in the US, NPR, has been doing some wonderful work on Syria, Tunisia, Egypt, by just being in touch with people. When someone tweets something, there's, you know, so 5 people have been shot in Tahrir Square.
Right,
It's like, how do you know that? And they're asking back, did you see that?
Yes.
Or did someone tell you? Who told you?
Yes. And then also you reminded me about, you know, the Arab Spring and how Twitter and Facebook were used to join people together, to share information to lead to that. So Twitter's a force for good or for change, as well as bringing challenges.
Yeah.
Where do you think it's going to go? Do you think it's going to stay as it is, or do you see some new technology coming on the horizon that might challenge this? Because one thing's for sure, nothing stays the same anymore. Things are always evolving.
Well, I think the core communications tool will stay the same. I mean, the Twitter, I call it, it used to be called a kind of micro-blogging thing, and that's how they originally thought of it, that people will write these short blog entries, and they're still called status updates, which seems a bit quaint when people are having a conversation in real time. And that idea of your message can go out, and whether you've got 50 followers or 500, or like Stephen Fry, I think he's up to 1.5 million.
Oh, really?
And Justin Bieber's 2 million or something. I think at one stage Justin Bieber was responsible for a sixth of Twitter's server computers.
Well, those teenage girls, there are a lot of them around.
Yeah. So that core system of brief messages which are darting about between the people who follow you and rippling out through the world. I think that's going to stay the same,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of search tools are going to stay the same, and the marketing people and news people are going to trawl through that. The big challenge for Twitter is actually making some money. Now, they really don't have much in the way of revenue yet. And just before Christmas, the Saudi prince, whose name I can never pronounce,
right.
but he's the 26th richest person in the world mm-hmm. and is an investor. He's called like the Arab Warren Buffett.
Okay.
He invests in technology companies and news
companies.
Does he
still live in the original house that he bought, you know, before he became rich?
Well, I think this would be the palace.
Unlike Warren Buffett, he's enjoying the spoils.
He is, but he did things like at one stage he owned 14.5% of Citibank and 7% of News Corporation.
Okay, we're talking a lot of bucks here.
Yeah, 26th richest man in the world. He invested $300 million in Twitter just before Christmas, which bought him around a bit over 3% stakeholding.
Right. Okay.
That values Twitter at 8.4 from memory, but just over $8 billion.
Wow.
Except Twitter's total revenue for this year is only $100 million.
Well, that's right, because they don't advertise through the site, do they?
They have started advertising.
Uh-huh.
You now have promoted tweets.
Right.
That.
Oh, yes, I have noticed that. That could, with the trending topics.
Yes,
have
and
the,
promoted
the
promote trends.
Trends.
This
yes.
is now a trend, says someone
yes.
plonking down money.
Yes.
And I think they were charging over $100,000 a day for something to be a promoted trend. But that's still small bickies when you kind of got to build this up. I mean, the old rule of thumb was, you know, a service company is valued on what a year of revenue is. So to be worth $8 billion, it really ought to be making $8 billions a year,
right.
not
But they're saying it's
million.
Potential. And who knows yes. what's going on in their heads as to where they want to take it, like your Jack
That's
Dorsey's
right.
and...
And people do pay good money to have that fire hose of tweets.
Mm.
Marketers analyse that. They want to watch that ripple out. We see that on ABC programs like Q&A
yes.
on a Monday night. I think they were
Very
getting about 25,000 tweets during the course
yeah.
of the program.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of analysis on that. But big companies, dare I say it, the global brands want to see what the reaction is to new products. And they can do this. They can, you know, Apple Computer can announce a rumour of a new product. And then over the next 24 hours, that rumour will be discussed on Twitter, and they just do data mining on the whole thing and go, well, how many people do you reckon will like this? How did that compare to our previous idea?
Yes, yes. So it's a marketer's dream, really.
It is, and I dare say that like all other communications channels, our international intelligence services also subscribe and spot things. I remember, it was probably 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago in New Scientist magazine, they were talking about you could actually analyse the language in news stories and letters and so on coming out of a country, and you could determine pretty tightly when the place was 6 weeks out from a riot or revolution because the way people discussed it shifted.
Ah.
And, you know, enough core people were starting to feel confident enough
That's amazing.
For a change.
And they can probably just send an algorithm across it to see the frequency of particular words. It's not as though it's
Absolutely.
A human who's even making this analysis often. It's a
That's
machine
right.
that just, you say, these are the criteria you're looking for. Tell me what the story is.
That's right. And it's interesting that those stories in New Scientist, they ran a couple of stories over the course of maybe a year or two. And then it just disappeared. So I assume that became a black program and has been incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of analysis, social analysis, political analysis, I mean, if we want to know what people think of Julia Gillard's latest speech as Prime Minister, well, you just watch
yes.
the reaction on Twitter.
That's true, and that's where I think it's most interesting in that real-time sense. So I remember I was in New York City and there was an Occupy Wall Street march up Park Avenue, and I could find out exactly where the march was just by going to Twitter. So you could sort of join in or go and have a look or whatever it was. It's like, that's pretty amazing, isn't it, that you
mm-hmm.
have that time. So whatever the information that you want is there. So you've got multiple conversations, multiple streams that you can access rather
yep.
than, say, with a radio station, you might have one thing on at a time or depending on how many radio stations you have. So it's just kind of explosion of information.
Absolutely. Queensland floods. QPS Media, the Queensland Police Force, did great work because they could very quickly gather information from people to know where roads were blocked, where there were problems. They could feed it back. They could squash the rumours by if they picked up a rumour that was wrong, they could immediately say, if you see this, that's wrong. Mm. The rioters in London, of course, late last year, well, they could communicate with each other about where the police were and avoid their roadblocks. So, again, a communications tool is completely neutral, and good guys use it, bad guys use it.
It's going to be an interesting time ahead. So Rupert Murdoch, just to go back to the start, he stopped tweeting now, right?
His latest tweet, New Hampshire primary will be interesting. Will either Huntsman or Santorum get any traction, say over 15% of total, he asks. Mm. And the one I like before that, he says, Achtung Angela Merkel, as in Chancellor of Germany. Course, yes. I'm now following you on WSJ Deutschland. Check it out. It's a plug for the German version of the Wall Street Journal.
My other thing is, where does Rupert find the time? Isn't he just flat out, you know, running his big media empire?
Well, he didn't have time to read any of the memos about News of the World hacking, so no, I think he just sits on his
I love that he also used the opportunity to mention a couple of films, coincidentally, from Fox Studios that he owns. So it's like there's a bit of marketing right there.
Favourite stories in the New York Times. Look, there's a clear sign that from about the 5th of January, someone's been helping him with the kind of... Protocols and standard formatting.
I hope his grammar improves too. I thought his grammar was good.
His grammar's improved wonderfully. Excellent. But look, he's in his 80s. He never really got into email, so...
Maybe he's got clunky thumbs too.
On his iPad.
Still, Gerry, it's been fantastic chatting with you. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure, Jen.
Lovely to see you. Still, Garian is a social media commentator. It's not old anymore. It's all new. The old is new again. We're coming up to news time here on ABC Local Radio. Come back.